Tonight we're making good on a promise, the promise to bring Amy Blakemore back for Tuesday evenings. As you probably recall, Amy's flight from Houston on September 22nd was canceled due to weather on that end. While we were all very disappointed, including Amy, we knew that we would get her here sooner than later, and sure enough, we have. Amy has been notably recognized for her diligence as an artist, taking some of the most unassuming yet immensely compelling photographs that I have ever seen. And if you don't know the work, I think you will agree with me when you see the presentation tonight. And if you do know the work, I think you know what I'm talking about. As curator and writer Michelle White describes the work in her essay on Amy for the winter-spring 2007 issue of Gulf Coast, a beautiful publication for those of you who are unfamiliar, she says, "Despite a careful negotiation of temporal ambiguity and placeness, Blakemore's vocabulary is profoundly familiar and evocative." And it is. There's something there that just keeps you looking and thinking you know it. With a Bachelor of Science in Psychology, followed by a Bachelor of Art from Drury College in Springfield, Missouri, and an MFA in Photography from UT, Amy came to art in a less direct way than some, and it is perhaps her varied interests and curiosities that have informed the images which earned her a lengthy and impressive exhibition history, including most recently the survey exhibition, Amy Blakemore, Photographs 1988 to 2008, which was curated by Allison Green at the MFA, Houston, this past year. It was a beautiful exhibition with a catalog, which I assume many of you have already found in our in the museum's store, because we're down to, I think, 8 copies since we ordered them for the September lecture. So if you haven't already gotten your hands on one of those, I think you're going to want to. There are only a few left. And then in one of the catalog essays is by Chrissy Isles, who, of course, is one of the co-curators for the 2006 Whitney Biennial Day for Night, which she curated with Philippe Verne. And Chrissy and Philippe found something in Amy's work that they felt really had to be in that 2006 Whitney Biennial. And I have to say that that's where the work first captured my attention. And I remember being struck by the fact that they were such, as I said, unassuming kind of photographs, almost snapshot quality. They had such a poetic quality and such a strength that they held up beautifully in that context, you know, 15 by 15, 19 by 19 photographs of something you think maybe you've known before but can't be sure. Amy was accepted in as a core fellow at the MFA Houston's Glassell School in 1985, and I think it's really interesting that she has continued to teach in some capacity with that school ever since. And the reason I think that's interesting is because, along with a very, very busy teaching schedule, she's been able to maintain and develop an industrious career that has been recognized in numerous ways, as I said, with a lengthy exhibition schedule that's all over the place, in addition to fellowships and grants and awards, some being the Dozier Travel Grant and the Kimbrough Grants from the DMA, as well as an Artita Fund for Art and Dialogue from New York. That, like I said, there is so much more to say about Amy's career, but I think what we really want to do is see these photographs and hear what she has to tell us about them. So would you please join me in welcoming Amy Blakemore?
Thanks for coming out tonight. Okay. I've never done this before, so... let's see, are those... cancel. Okay. Could you turn the lights down a little bit, please? Okay. I haven't really shown work up here before. I've been in a couple of group shows. I can't even remember. In the 90s, at some point. And I'm just assuming maybe you don't know my work, and I thought maybe I'll just give you kind of a short history of it and kind of how it informs the current work. This picture right here is my first picture, really, the first one I did, my first college photo class. And I think it's the one that told me that I could be a photographer. I didn't know I could make a living at it, or people would buy stuff or books. I didn't know there were photo books. But it also tapped into my interest in religion and healing services. When I was a kid, I used to watch the Rise Up and Be Healed show until my mom made my brother and me stop watching it because I found it a little too entertaining. So this was at a healing service. And it was back when I didn't really know how to develop film, so things came out contrasty, but I still made it work. So after doing that, I had to take two art classes to graduate from college. I was a psych and sociology major. So I took weaving, and that didn't work out very well. And then I took photography. And then decided I didn't want to... I was going to go to WashU and do a law and social work degree, because I wanted to be an advocate for the elderly or people with mental health issues. Anyway, I didn't do that. I ended up sticking around Springfield, where I went to school, and working on a psych unit at night and doing photography in the evenings. And then the professors just let me have a key of the building so I could work all night. So this kind of happened. This is a fluke, all this photography stuff. But then I realized that everything I've done since then has been geared toward doing my photography, sometimes more intensely than others, but in the choice of jobs I've had, which range from delivering dominoes and cleaning a gallery, which was kind of humiliating when other photographers came in, and photographing kidney stones, just all those little things and jobs I could do to do my photography. So anyway, let's see. This is a picture I did from graduate school. So I'd walk around San Antonio usually. I went to school at UT in Austin and just kind of talk to people, go up and ask them what they're doing. Hey, what are you doing? And then they'd ask if I was a cop, and then we'd chit-chat and I could take their picture. Or I'd go into stores, and it was before San Antonio really became developed down by the Alamo. Because I was really interested in people. And also, I just finished my 2 years of working on the psych unit between college and graduate school. So this is from one project I did in school, which were the story pictures. And so this is what Ed Buckley told me. And, there's probably 15 others. And I did a documentary project on the Alamo Hotel, which was being torn down and... the occupants were being kicked out. So I was in a very documentary-oriented department, and I know how to use all those big cameras. I have them, 8x10, 4x5, Hasselblads, you name it. But I finally found my way to using a Diana, and I'm going to get that all out of the way here. Okay, so this is what it looks like. Okay, the box. That was Betty's. So they're just plastic cameras. They're very trendy right now. You can buy them at Urban Outfitters. And it's like a fake, it's a new fake Diana. Oh, it is. It's a hybrid, okay? So it takes some of the features from the original Diana and the Holga and puts them together. And it's probably a little bit better than the cameras I use. Anyway, I have one. I have the stripes, the Meg version someone gave me. So let's see. So when I was finishing up graduate school, I think I was getting kind of tired of taking pictures of people. I mean, it really became kind of easy. And so a friend of mine and a professor had been using this stupid camera. It's Diana. And I thought, okay, I'll try it. And I still thought it was kind of dumb. But I found eventually that was what I was looking for. I guess maybe my voice. So I applied to the CORE program with my documentary projects and then some of these Diana pictures, and was accepted on the Diana pictures, which has put me into complete terror because I didn't know, I just didn't understand it. So when I was a CORE fellow, nothing really worked. But I was taking these pictures, and it wasn't until, I guess, the year after I got out of there, when I was visiting friends in New York frequently and taking pictures while I was walking around, that everything started to kind of gel. So then I started, it's a series, it all kind of came together. I didn't set out to do a project called Story Pictures. And so the pictures from now on are done with this Diana camera. So when I started doing this, I had to figure out all the problems with it, the light leaks and the focus and all that, which I found really interesting and very frustrating and challenging. But these are kind of, I'd say, they're influenced a bit by this painter I knew in Springfield, a folk art painter named Robert E. Smith, and he'd make paintings and then narrate them with stories. And also, after having worked in the psych unit, and even as a student, I was really fascinated by this set of cards from the testing class, the thematic apperception test. And it's a set of cards with some kind of crummy drawings or prints on them. And the counselor, the tester would say, "Tell me a story." And this, I think, came from that in part. Because when I do these pictures, they're, for me, like a visual diary. On all these pictures, I know exactly where I was, who I was with, how it made me feel, you know, everything about it except what year it happened. Because I guess that's maybe not as relevant. And it's a way of me being able to remember something, look at something, and feel something without really telling anyone what I'm thinking, in a way. And I'm also interested in how it makes other people feel and if it hits on something with them or a trigger. So I think this of these pictures, and there aren't that many that I have here, was the first one that went, wow, okay. And it's the first one the Museum of Fine Arts in Houston bought. And this is called Three Girls. And a friend of mine who's a psychologist saw a Jungian psychologist. That's everyone. That's all of us. But it's just how someone might interpret it. I mean, I'm not going to tell you what to see. And this is from the same time period. And I don't know. I think my pictures are they're ambiguous. Again, some people have told me they see this as a mother being protective of this child, or the mother pulling the hair back so the picture can be taken, or, you know, just these different elements. Also, when I'm taking pictures, probably not this one, though, because this is real fast, I'm organizing the space, and my pictures are probably the most organized thing in my life. I mean, it's like putting the square around something. So those were taken kind of the first couple of years I was doing this and working in black and white. And they're pictures of kids. And really, I just kind of take pictures. I mean, this is the only one I took of this. I usually just take one or two and hope they come out. And it's part of the deal of working with this camera, because I don't know if they're going to come out. And when they do, that's really great. And I don't know when I'm taking the picture if it'll work at all. So then I'm really happy when it does. And I may not get any pictures off a roll. I mean, that often happens. But I don't know, I don't make contact sheets, which is really bad because I can't find anything. But, you know, my arms get a workout looking for something. But let's see, I forgot what I was going to say. Sorry. Anyway, let's see. And like this one, this friend of mine sees this joyful child, and let's go play a game. And I kind of see it as, oh my God, you know, watch out. She's like luring you into something horrible. You know, so, and that tells us, you know, about me too, I guess. But I like figuring out the problems in the dark room. I print all my black and white and all my color in my dark room. And the color's processed in a Jobo rotary tube, if anyone remembers what that is. No digital. And I'm not. It's not that I'm opposed to digital. It's just that the idea of sitting at a desk and messing with the computer and doing something I can't really see, it doesn't suit me, really. I mean, printing is really active. I like the physicality of it. And it's really frustrating. Okay, this is, you know, a child, but this is part of this pilgrimage series I did for a while when I tried to work on a project, which I haven't finished, really, because I switched over to color. But I think it was with the Dozier Travel Grant, I went to Europe and shot various pilgrimage sites, Catholic pilgrimage sites, because, again, it's about my interest in religion and what people do with it and how it soothes them and how it plays a part in their life. So I'm not Catholic, but, you know, there are a bunch of those sites. And on one of these trips, I don't remember which one, I went on a bus trip with 49 other people on an air-conditioned bus through France, Spain, and Portugal and England for about 2 weeks, taking in all these different sites. And it was really kind of great. It was kind of weird, but anyway, this is like one from there. This is another one, which I guess because I don't think anything's going to come out, I'm just taking pictures and hoping they will. I don't really remember taking ones. And this one was in Lourdes, France, and there are thousands of people there. I don't know how this happened, that I only got the nurse and the person in the wheelchair in that plaza. Let's see, that's from there too, nurses. Some of these are a little, the slides aren't so great. Nurses, I like to fill up the space. I don't know, this is another one. This is at the Mary Factory. And this, for those of you all who work in a dark room, this negative was black. It was so overexposed, and I think the exposure was like 4 minutes, like at F4. And I had to burn it for a really long time. And I swore I would never, ever do it again, but they made me put it in the show at the museum, and I couldn't talk them out of it. And I even went back to retake it, and it still didn't work. I mean, I like the picture. It's just, you know, you can see how grainy it is. And my choice of film, like with black and white, I think I probably just used HP5, but in the color ones, I wanted to be able to take pictures inside, so I was using Konica 3200 speed film, which is really grainy. And plus, I was shooting outside in broad daylight. It's like, you know, I should have thought ahead a little bit. But so it presented a lot of problems in the dark room. Let's see. Okay, I've always taken portraits. So that I was taking non-portraits kind of surprised me, but this is a friend of mine. In the black and white, but more so in the color, I'm drawn to the light. I think that's what I see first. And I'll just walk around, oh my God, look at that, look at that. Wow. You know, so I'm just walking around talking to myself. It's kind of looking at stuff. And I'm kind of, I feel like I'm not really present then. Here I was, it's just this light coming across his face. And I did lots of portraits, you know, in black and white. And I remember that day and where we were, someone else's apartment, and these are just triggers for me because I can't remember anything, but I remember everything here, and it kind of hits me in the gut sometimes. So I guess it was, around 1995, I started taking color pictures again. So there was about a 10-year period when I was doing black and white. So this was one of the first ones, I think. And she's from Dallas, Steph Cummings. Anyway, this was taken in 1995, and that kind of represented a shift. It wasn't conscious, really, but I'd taken these pictures in Portugal when I was there. And I don't know, I just started doing it. And also, they discontinued my favorite paper, my favorite black and white paper, and I just couldn't find one I liked well enough. And I think I was really ready for a change. And so there's pictures of my friends. Just my friends, really, or people I know, a lot of them. This person liked this picture. She was surprised. She didn't hate it, she said. So I took that as a big compliment. This is the street I grew up on. It's Miss Goodner and Mr. Milhorn. She was our neighbor for 50 years. But I really love this picture of her because it's her and the composition, the design, and this is one I think it was from 96, I don't know, somewhere around then, but I didn't really print it until, I guess, the biennial, actually. They saw, I think I'd made a print, but I'd never really shown it, and they saw it and they liked it, and so that was like a 10-year delay, really. Okay, this is a commission portrait I took of this woman. This is a picture she gave to her now ex-husband on their wedding day. The other one I liked, and she liked too, was really scary. So again, it's the light. At the top, there's a light leak where it's kind of red in the grass. So I had to figure out how to deal with this stuff. I don't really like major light leaks. But when I started using this camera, there really wasn't anyone to ask, because there wasn't any internet. But just figuring things out, and I like the challenge. It's like one of the rules. So I think what I learned from this picture is I operate on a much more intuitive and spontaneous level. As this was a commission, and she worked at the museum, she's like a curatorial assistant, and I'd never done that. I shot 11 rolls of film on this, and this was the 7th picture on the first roll. And I just do better just being there in the moment. Let's see. This is related to a pilgrimage site, but only I know that, and the friend I was with, the policeman. And a lot of the pictures I found, like as I started putting things together and saw them for the show, I've got the direct portraits, but then there's a period of time that I keep, well, actually it's a long period of time, where people are not looking at me, and it's about, I guess, a moment in time, a moment, just, it's more about the person in the picture and maybe not about that person, or maybe what happened before or what happened after. Anyway, I have a bunch of those, and it's not like I did this consciously, actually. I just started looking at things over a period of time, and I've got pictures of him where he's looking at me, but this was someone who was, I guess, moving the next day. And again, this was across the street from their house, and the light was amazing. This is another one who thought the picture wasn't horrible, so that meant it was good. She liked it. I just take pictures. My friend Duncan. And originally when I saw this, I didn't want to print it. I didn't like the shadow on his chest. I thought that was too easy. And he was just, I think, getting a cigarette out of his package. But I like the space in it. I like how his ears are really red. It was hot and sunny. It was down in Corpus right after 9/11. So for me, these were, again, like, oh, I remember that. I remember everything about it. Another friend. And this harsh light. She did not like this picture. What is that? I don't know what to say, really. My cousin Billy at my uncle's funeral. And again, just like standing there and taking a picture, it makes me remember things. And if other people get stuff out of it, then I'm happy. This is on the cover of the catalog from the museum. Let's see. Garden Girl. Something else that I like is I wonder how people, what they think of when they're decorating their yards. Like, now this one, their house is back a little bit, but they change these out. And this is what they're thinking, what they're trying to say, what are they presenting, what do they want other people to see. And anyway, they make me laugh, and it's just, you know, from, you know, a lot of Christmases and holidays spent in Tulsa not wanting to hang out and watch TV with my parents, so just drive around. And the winter light is my favorite, but that wasn't it. What I like about this one is, I don't know really how it happened or the optics of it, that garage looks so much smaller than this bush. Like it doesn't, like you could put that bush in the garage maybe. You couldn't get it through the door. And just the distortion of the space. And this is another one from Tulsa. You know, just the Tulsa Fairgrounds horse barns that aren't there anymore. Again, just driving around and just kind of putting a frame around something. It's a red chair. And again, you know, I have the story in my head. And for me, in my head, the story, it's funny because I remember what happened. But, I'm not sure what people see about that one. This is something I stared at for about a week at breakfast. Well, actually, all meals. When I was on this pilgrimage trip to Bosnia, and this was in the guest house, which would house about 120 people. Because I guess they couldn't call them hotels, but... So it's a flag made out of plastic carnations, and I really loved it, and I wanted one, but, you know, I couldn't find one, and I couldn't take it back anyway. It's too big. It's just, you know, like, I couldn't get one, but I can remember it. Again, you know, an interest in how people, what they do to their yards and what they're saying, and I'm sure there are other things, too, but... Like, the people can't see this stuff from their house. So I just wonder what it is they're thinking about it. And I love it. And if I had a house, like, I would like to have one of those deer, I think. Or a bunch of them, actually. But, again, it's just putting a frame around something. And on this one, I only shot one picture. I don't know why I do that. But, you know, just, okay. And this negative is really screwed up, too. Most of them are, which now it's like that I'm using a better film. It's like, God, what was I doing? Okay, this one, not funny. This one was taken actually outside of Logan Airport, like their flight pattern. And, you know, it just makes me think of things. Okay, some of y'all might recognize this. Sam Houston Monument. Though one of my students asked someone else where I was hiding in these bushes when this big man came by, which, I mean, that, and she's really smart. I was just like, what? She really didn't say that. Anyway, this was taken where Jill in the Woods was taken, and we were going to the prison museum, which was really, we didn't actually go in, but... and I'd never seen this thing, so we stopped and just took pictures. They're my travel pictures, these. Okay. So I do take a lot of, I don't take pictures much where I live, and that's always, I guess that was the case in Austin as well, because I'd drive to San Antonio or someplace else to take pictures. So getting away, I don't have to do anything. I don't have to go to the grocery store or work on school stuff. So it gets me, you know, out of my regular life. But I also don't want the pictures to be real specific. I mean, this is really specific, if you know what it is. But Like I was in Mexico, I guess before Christmas, and I'd see some things like, now it looks like it's Mexico. So I don't really like to identify a location. Let's see, this, is that good with that one? Yeah, let's see. Okay, what I liked about this one is it's just this mural on this cracked wall of the Astoria Hotel in Lourdes. And that was, again, someplace I'd sit and look. But it was really up high. And this is also one I probably didn't print for 10 years. Well, same with that deer and teepee one, too, the deer on the... So I guess every now and then, if I'm looking for something else, I'll go through my negatives when I did have contact sheets. Why didn't I print that? And the same would be with this one. I never even saw this one before until I was printing for the show. What I like about this is there's Pam, but it looks like she's in front of a fake landscape. And that kind of looks like a real thing, but it's not, with real trees. Again, just travels. I went to visit my friend Pam and her husband Doug in New Zealand about, well, it's been over a little, over 10 years ago, I guess. And there's, I'm not really that athletic. So I wasn't going to go skiing or bungee jumping or, I don't know, nature-y stuff, really. But that's kind of what there is to do there. Because I was really used to taking pictures of people. And so I was down there for a month, and for 2 weeks I traveled by myself. And there really isn't much else to take pictures of, which actually turned out to be fine. That's not in New Zealand. That's just out a friend's window in New York. Okay, New Zealand. So I did these kind of, well, pictures of nature. I think I was probably a little bit depressed, too. So some of the other ones that aren't here, I think, reflect that, perhaps. Oh, sorry, codfish. Okay, when Allison was putting the show together, and I'll go back. Okay, she was talking about my abstract landscapes and my abstractions, and I didn't know what she was talking about, really. But, she kind of tied everything together. She's not a photography curator at the museum. So she placed the pictures in a way that I probably wouldn't have or didn't see the connections. And so, just pools. And those are codfish drying on a screen. And actually this, I believe, is where this and that picture of Stephanie, the orange woman, this is when I started doing the color. This was taken on a trip, a pilgrimage trip. I was in Fatima. And I took just a few rolls of color and a lot of black and white. And I didn't really like any of the black and white ones, but I liked the color. And so I just started shifting over gradually. It wasn't like a huge conscious decision. It was just more fun. And the pools. Okay. This picture creeps people out. And I mean, I can see why. The shoes and the Holocaust. And it was taken in Bosnia, I think in 95. So there was minimal shooting going on and bombings. Not in the area I was, but I was just walking down this pretty red dirt road and came upon all these shoes in a big pit. And it actually did scare me. And it was just shoes. Lots and lots of shoes. Let's see. Just Signal Hill. Again, attracted to the light. And I guess I didn't see these as being abstract. They're like pictures, they are pictures. And this, I think, was probably one of my more favorite ones from New Zealand. And it's, see it in the side, but there's a lot of subtlety in the blues, like in the sky. And that's called Stormy Landscape. And okay, that's, again, just looking up, this is looking at the sky. This is a sky above my parents' house. Now I'm getting into the kind of, the ones that, those are just kind of landscapes, and I guess the ones I should have shown you have not, they had meaning to me, but not like hit me in the gut meaning. And actually some of these happened after, but these are, I guess the next ones kind of deal with loss and death and all that. But this is my favorite uncle, who always allowed me to photograph him. And I photographed, this might be the last, well, the last picture of him that he didn't look really sick, that I took of him through the screen, and he didn't know. I was outside looking in and taking his picture. And his farm was a place I have photographed quite a bit, but I don't have those in here. But it was a really special place for me. Okay, and that's an old woman going to a car, which it's my mom, but she hated this. But it just, you know, it captured her in a moment, and it's probably maybe a year after my dad died, and kind of before she stopped walking well. Okay, so these are kind of my family pictures, my family snapshots. My dad's El Camino. You know, in the street I grew up on, where, you know, the parents' house still is. But this one is a little bit more unusual for me in that, you know, just kind of that really deep, well, not really deep, it's just the ones taken at night, I guess, because this was taken at night. And then the light on the grill is from a security light. But this one is a little bit more unusual. People refer it to as my David Lynch picture. But it's just my dad's El Camino. This was at my uncle's farm, and this is before anyone died. And this was, you know, to me, just the cellar we weren't allowed to play in. And, you know, we'd stay away from it. And besides, that door was like concrete and metal. We couldn't lift it. But, you know, it was always one of those places we wanted to go because we couldn't. We weren't supposed to. And also on that one, I think you might be able to see it from there. The corners are really, really blurry, which is characteristic of the Diana, or some Dianas. They're all unique. And I don't like it. I mean, I like it in this picture, and I think it works, but generally, that's, I don't really even want it to look like I do Diana pictures, which is why I dodge the corners so they're not too dark. But it's, okay, this is my dad's workshop. And I took pictures of it at Christmas, how it looks now, which is horrible. But I totally forgot about it until I was putting this together. It's like, oh yeah, just to see a contrast. But again, this is another trigger for me, like, oh, yes, I remember the phone call. I remember, you know, crying with my brother on the patio. So we just found out my dad was going to die, and, you know, just, so for me it means a whole lot. And I gave it to my brother as a wedding present, which it's kind of hanging in his, out of the way, so I don't think they really liked it too much. And it's like, oh yeah, I get it. And this is a picture of my dad after he died. I showed it to my little brother a couple of years ago, and so I told him about it. I showed it, and he said, oh, it's not so bad. Then when they came down for my opening at the MFA, and another one of my brothers hadn't seen it, so I told him about it, and he said, well, people don't need to see that kind of stuff. Well, I gave him a catalog just so he'd see it, and not, well, he didn't look at it. So he ended up going to the show and then just kind of being shocked and kind of started to cry. It's like, oh, I'm so sorry, you didn't look at the catalog. But I don't know, I like this picture a lot. And I guess I was a little, I guess I'm usually surprised, or used to be, that people like responded to my pictures because they're so personal to me. Yeah, people have responded to this one quite a bit. Like, I took a class over to see the show, and this woman was crying, and I thought maybe something happened, but she was just looking at the picture. So I'm glad that I can move people like that. When I was taking this, or I wasn't going to take it, and my mom was upset, kind of, that I was taking pictures, I'd been taking pictures all week. So I waited for them to get down. We walked down the hall, and I ran back real fast and took this picture. And really, it's the only time I think that, oh, this picture has to come out. Like, other times, it's like, you know, it's a bargain you make. Well, it may or may not come out. And this was really dark, and I had them push it at two stops and did everything. But there's still hardly anything on the negative. And that picture up there, you probably can't tell, but it's a picture of Jesus. But anyway, it's one of my, I don't know, the ones that really hits me. And then, you know, again, at where I grew up, my dad's dog. And this was taken, I mean, I see it as going with the workshop, the picture of my dad, and this one, the three of them together, that this one was taken, I think, about 5 years after he died. And then that's my mom, the last time, well, the last time I took a good picture of her, I think. I mean, I have some that I won't look at that I took about a year later, but so the thing with the Diana is, if it comes out, it comes out, and I've got these rules, I mean, in my head. Like, I don't crop, but, I mean, I could crop, I just don't think to do it, because when I was in graduate school, I spent a summer not cropping pictures, so I'd pay more attention to the viewfinder, and so it's just kind of a habit. Let's see. And, I mean, I'll crop if there's a scratch or some imperfection close to the edge. And then let's see. This was just what the show looked like at the MFA. And let's see. That was up last May through the middle of September. And I reprinted all my pictures, which took a lot longer than I thought, like a year and a half. So I really haven't been in my darkroom much since then, which is, you know, coming up on a year. But, I mean, I've been in there, but I was so burned out on printing. But the reason I reprinted all these is so I could make them turn up the lights, because I knew that it would be really dark in there. And since I own them all, I could do what I wanted to with them. And so they did. Okay, that's that. And then, let's see, some more of those. And I guess that's that. And I think this might be the last one. I don't know what time it is. Let's see. Oh, no. Okay, there's Steph again. And then there's Steph again. So she came in from L.A. for the opening. And so that's like, I guess, 15 years difference. It's on her Facebook picture or something. So I think that's all. That's all. All the pictures, but I don't know what time is it? I have 15 minutes, huh? Do y'all have 15 minutes of questions? I mean, like, you can turn the lights down. But let's see. Here's what the camera looks like. Let's see. I don't know how to. Okay, so I guess I've got those there. So this is, I think these are about 60 pictures. I mean, I've got, I don't know, probably close to 300. But, and then this has been interesting for me to put together, because I did have to kind of organize these, because these pictures were taken at various times, but there's, I guess, you know, 1998, 2008, I can kind of put them together in a way. Anyway.
Do you want to ask questions?
Yeah, I don't really have anything else to say. I mean, I could, but I don't really. Yeah, why don't you ask me if you have questions?
Amy, I have a question.
Okay.
About memory in two different ways of taking photos as a visual diary,
mm-hmm.
and your connection to the images with your memory. And you also made a statement about observing the light in a way where you're not really present, and coming back to photos where you don't remember that moment. And I wonder if, with your background in psychology, if you kind of have an idea about how memory relates to image creation for visual artists, or something with your psychology background.
It wasn't really that good of a degree. I mean, it was just... It just got me a job at the psych hospital. It wasn't like anything. My degree did not prepare me for working on a closed psych unit. So I don't know the answer to your question. But I guess for me, because I really have such a horrible memory, except for things that aren't important for the most part. But I may not remember the exact moment I took the picture, but I remember being there. I don't know the answer to your question. I'm sorry.
Well, to expand a little bit on that question, it sounds like you're saying you don't necessarily remember dates, but you remember circumstance. So
right.
Your mind sort of collapses with these images, and the way they serve as markers for you.
Mm-hmm.
It really makes me think of someone, whose memory has been, whose brain has been affected, like by dementia or Alzheimer's, where they'll have these triggers.
Mm-hmm.
But time collapses, 50 years ago is today.
Well, that's what they feel like to me, because this is over a period of 20 years. And, it feels like that. And they feel like when you're, like when you're driving and something just flashes in your head. And I guess that's kind of how they work for me.
See the world. Do you see things kind of through that lens? You said squaring it off.
Yeah, not as much as I would like to, because I really am kind of burned out, I think. And maybe not even. I might start using a different camera, actually. I'd walk by and it's almost like I was snapping pictures, and because really just taking the picture. That's the best part. I've got all kinds of film at home I haven't developed yet. Or stuff I've developed and haven't cut up. I walk around. Like, especially when there's good light, like today. It's like, oh, I should have brought my camera. I didn't even bring one. It's just like that. And sometimes it happens more often than others. I don't know. It's just, I had such an intense passion for this for so long. It isn't as much right now. I think I just need to, a lot of people died last year, and I had to do the show, and so it's just, I'm trying to get my head around all that. Everything was oriented, like I said, for doing this. And I guess I didn't really realize that until recently. I don't know where I've been the last 25 years. But I guess just acknowledging how important it has been for me, which I don't think I'd done before, really. I mean, it was like something I know I had to do, but I hadn't really thought about it much more after that.
On the subject of the camera, it sounds like you chose it because of its limitations.
Yeah.
That seems an odd choice.
Yes, sounds really stupid.
If there's some way you interacted with the camera physically that attracted you, or it doesn't sound like the end result was the attraction because you had to fight with it to get what you wanted.
Right. Well, I mean, I was really proficient in cameras, you know, the f-stops and, you know, and all that business, and it just was kind of boring. I mean, I knew how something was going to come out pretty much. Like, I've been doing, like, ceramics in the high school class. I mean, I'm horrible, but I can throw a bowl now, and I don't want to do it because it's just kind of boring. You know, I want to make something messed up. And I guess, well, when I was a kid, I'd get interested in something intensely, and then the next week it'd be something else, and on. And photography is really the only thing that's stuck. And I think because it's so unpredictable is why I like using this camera and having to figure out problems. And lately, you know, someone said, well, you could do that in Photoshop in 5 seconds. And it might take me 5 hours. And it's like, wow, I really could. But I'm really trying to hold off as long as I can, because I enjoy this process and the process of making decisions in the dark room. That if I gave my negatives to someone else to print, that wouldn't happen. I mean, I've done that before and actually haven't been very satisfied, so I just do it myself now. But I like the limitations. And it's just, it's part of the deal. Oh, sure, just... Oh, okay, I guess I'm supposed to call on you. Okay. You can just ask.
Can you comment on young people, young photographers, or even older people who have never used film? And I know that there's some very practical problems with finding the negative, finding paper, finding a dark room, or even finding a printer if you want to entrust your work to another printer. But Sugimoto talked here years ago, and he made it very clear that film was the pinnacle of quality and creative richness, and he totally doesn't believe in digital. So what's your advice for people that want to try to work with film, even for the first time, on a practical level?
Well, I had friends in graduate school who had tiny enlargers under the stairs. Like, she couldn't even stand up. She was working on her knees and with this kind of cascade system. And I set up dark rooms like pretty much everywhere I lived since college. And you can do it just under really bad circumstances. And I can't even give the enlargers away at school right now. I mean, I'm trying to get rid of a bunch. But stuff has become pretty cheap, and I took classes, but, you know, 5 people would sign up, and then I'd be the only one left. So we didn't really have class. So a lot of the stuff I did was learning on my own and making a lot of mistakes. But developing film is pretty easy. I don't know. I think it's really sad that people could go through a photo program and never go into a dark room. I think it's really fun, and you can just get lost in it. Do you print?
Mm-hmm. I grew up in a dark room.
So. Yeah, just the smell of fix. And, you know, I'm old school. I mean, I teach at the Glassell School of Art in Houston, which is the teaching arm of the MFA, and I have 10 darkroom classes. I don't do digital. But I have 10. We've had as many as 20 classes per week, but we're down to, I guess, 10. There's only 2 of us. 12. I don't know. I just think it's really sad that people don't get that experience, because I think it's really valuable. And that, I mean, I don't understand the digital stuff. I don't do it. I don't know how to turn my camera on or do all that stuff. You know, I got one free with a printer. It's not like I think it's bad or horrible. It's just not for me. And I'm going to hold out as long as I can, even though they quit making my paper again. Well, they don't sell in sheets, so now it's in 288-foot rolls. And so the next problem is, how am I going to cut that up without dinging it and getting fingerprints on it so that it fits in my easel and in the tube? But I did locate this thing called a Roma, which is... Well, in my mind, I thought, okay, what I need is a paper cutter, a really big one, that will protect the paper from dark. And lo and behold, there was one. And I went and bought 2 of them from someone in Corpus, and they're enormous. I mean, they really didn't fit in my car very well, and I don't know what to do with them. Except now they're under my bed until I can get it to school. Because the paper, they use the ultra glossy surface, Endura, the Kodak, which is the most saturated because I like that. And also my negatives are really crummy, so I need more contrast. But yeah, and as a teacher, it's really difficult because I'll tell someone to go get something and they don't make it anymore. Like timers, I'm having a really hard time finding good timers. So does that kind of answer your question? Okay. I just keep doing film. It's fun.
So I don't do darkroom stuff if we don't have it this long enough, but I noticed that you use like 120 film when you used to do Diana.
Yeah.
And you get that size and everything. And I was just wondering, you're talking about like framing it, giving it the border and everything, the image that you take. Why do you prefer to do it with 120 or with the, you know, like a square border instead of just like a normal 35 millimeter?
Well, like a rectangle? Yeah. I see square.
Yeah.
And like with students, like something, I have to stop myself because I'm like, okay, well, if you could just do it like, and I realize I'm trying to make their picture into square, which is not always the best thing. But it's just the way I've been seeing, because I've got rectangular cameras too, and I just, I don't know, I'm just very, very comfortable with it. And I've recently found a 35 millimeter camera that does square. So, I mean, it's a nice camera, but it's also a rangefinder, because focusing has become kind of difficult as I've gotten older. So I haven't figured out the focusing thing yet. You know, with these like bifocals. But I don't know. Have you tried a square?
Yeah, I tried the Diana and stuff, but I've had bad luck with developing film since I don't have a third room or anything.
Oh yeah.
So it's unreliable.
Well, you kind of need that kind of quicker feedback to find out what the problems are and how to fix them. Okay, anyone else? I don't see any. You can just say, I can't see. But I don't think.
Good. That was perfect. Thank you.
Is it over? Yay. Thank you. Tons. Wow. That's right on time.